weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion, for we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. Which is the homepage, that's timeforawakening.com, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media, the homepage, is there. And it should be one of your favorites. If not, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. We'll take you to Time for Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, upcoming blogs, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're in open forum. Anything that's on your mind and some things happening, give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We might have a special guest join us in the second half hour of the program. Some things going on here locally in the city of Philadelphia that some of our local audience and national audience need to know about. Hopefully they'll be joining us at that time. But until then, the floor is yours. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Are you one of the million conscious black people who believes that we have the collective wherewithal to affect real economic and political change? If so, band together in solidarity by joining the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Choose leadership that will work for the best interests of black people. We can no longer sit on the sidelines and expect things to change for the better without a significant number of black people playing a pivotal role in that effort. Will you be one of the million that recognizes that black dollars matter? Are you that person who believes it's time to leverage our votes for reciprocity from politicians? If so, then you should join the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, with members in 29 states and growing every day. We encourage you to sign up and help spread the word by sharing our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. That's IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
Welcome back. Time for an awakening and a little technical glitch, but we got things situated here. I want to welcome in my co-host and Philadelphia activist, tour guide at the African American Museum here at Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie. How's things?
How you feel, sir?
I'm feeling good. I had a busy weekend this weekend. You know, I've been preparing for a while to do the this year and next year is the 100th memorial of African Americans, but you know, that's what we're focusing on, who fought in the First World War. And Eden Cemetery asked me to come out and do a tour. They have 300 and so African American World War I vets buried there. So it's been an interesting journey for me, delving into that experience and this weekend and trying to, you know, communicate what was the African-American's point of view or the American-African's point of view during that time period. It was a learning experience for me to see the very many dimensions and also to try to communicate it. So that was something that just, for me, that was going on this weekend, at least.
You know, the that Eden Cemetery here in Philadelphia is an historic cemetery here for folks in the Philadelphia and Pennsylvania listening area. A lot of my ancestors, some of the earliest citizens or residents in Philadelphia that were free blacks are buried in Eden. Some historic figures and average folk are buried together out there in Eden Cemetery. In fact, Octavius Cato, who they're erecting a monument to, is buried in Eden.
Several
people, historic folks are buried.
James Fortin, Marian Anderson, the Tiddley Temple from Tiddley Church, who created me. Yes, it's interesting that we call it a cemetery of cemeteries because it goes back, those residents, we call them citizens. It's 90,000 citizens at Eden. Those residents that are at peace at Eden came there at a time when, you know, once again, African-Americans had difficulty burying, but they were brought from other cemeteries. That goes back to the, you know, early 1800s. And just as a note, Elliot, today also, the African American Genealogical Society was there to support the Friends of Eden in helping to catalog and identify. They're taking the pictures, they're looking in the record book so that we will have a historical reference of those ancestors that we have. And, you know, ancestors is very powerful, important to our understanding of our experience in the present as we try to navigate to the future. So, as you said, Eden Cemetery becomes very much a historical reservoir for us. And the whole question of cemeteries nationally, it seems that this movement of African-American cemeteries is something that's growing. So Eden is a part of that. In trying to figure out how do we catalog and identify and bring forward those stories of those men and women who lived in prior periods that have lessons to tell us of our experience right now.
You know, it's kind of ironic that you were at the cemetery today and showing some of the folks there, some of our ancestors that fought in that First World War. The First World War was, it was sort of different than other world wars or other wars that our ancestors fought here. But it was always the same theme. Our ancestors fought for freedom for our people and for a better life here in this country, because they were always considered lower class, second class, third or fourth class citizens. Mm-hmm. So the way they looked at the flag and the so-called patriotism of this country was totally different than white folk, even to this day. You see now a lot of younger, and they're young, because we got to realize, and some of us take for granted because they're grown men, that, you know, you look at them almost on your level, so to speak. But these young men that's playing these sports here, they're on average in their 20s, Richard. Mm. So this is their first real experience dealing with any issues of substance. I was talking to Brother Ralph earlier, and he mentioned to me that a lot of these guys, they had been sheltered when they was in school, treated better than some of the other blacks that were in school. They were scholar athletes. They went on to college, didn't have to go to class, things of that nature. So they had a different experience. And then when they get to the pros, they're making a lot of money. So the consciousness part of it, if they don't come from a family that teaches them some type of conscious background, it kind of eludes some of these guys. They don't realize what's going on until things kind of smack them in the face. So I think that we have to kind of give them a little leeway when you see them starting to awake to certain things. You see now, after that idiot president made some statements on, I think it was Friday, when he was among some of his brethren down there in Birmingham, Alabama, made some statements in reference to, he was referring to black athletes. He didn't say black athletes, but that's what he was referring to. I don't know whether you heard some of the statements.
No, you know, and I know I heard, I because of my involvement this weekend, I really couldn't grasp it. I seen something.
Well, I'm gonna play a little clip so you can hear it, and some of our listening audience that might not have heard it, this will be for them also.
Everyone in this arena tonight are unified by the same great American values. We're proud of our country. We respect our flag. Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired.
Yeah, so you hear some of the comments that he made, and you hear the chants of some of the whites. I didn't see a black in the audience, but I'm quite sure it might have been some sprinkled in there. That stadium or wherever he was packed. So, you know, you heard the comments. We're proud of our country, and we respect our flag. Now, he was preaching to the choir. It was full of white folks. Mm-hmm. He's white. Mm-hmm. By and large, black folks are not proud of this country. And they don't respect the flag. And I'm going to speak for the majority of our people, unless some of our people are totally asleep. They don't respect this country, and they're not proud of any flag. We're here. We've been here for a number of years. We have to do better for ourselves while we're here and to prepare ourselves to move our people forward. But the things that's going on centering around white supremacy and the people that are gatekeepers of white supremacy and that first line of defense of white supremacy, which is these police forces around this country, when you get some of these young people that want to stand up in reference to or kneel down, so to speak, in reference to things going on, then you have to get behind their efforts, because some of these young people, this is the first time they're getting involved in anything like this, and it's going to be a backlash for them. I mean, look what happened to Kaepernick when he started it. Now, it was a lot of criticism. Well, it was some criticism among even the conscious black people about what he was doing and what he looked like. But we see now in retrospect that what he started is filtering down or spreading among other young black athletes, which they never wanted in the beginning. That's why they didn't welcome him back in this league. And that's why they try to put a stop to his efforts and spreading among other blacks. But
it's definitely spreading. It's interesting how it is spreading, and people are picking up to, you know, I know I did hear how people were questioning whether they were going to be watching the NFL games. And I don't know what the numbers have had, what impact that has had on the you know, just the games itself. And now it seems, as you say, that more and more players are engaged in communicating their dissatisfaction, picking up on Kaepernick. And I guess also picking up on that the injustices that from the police department is not stopping. The recent St. Louis releasing or not charging the officer for the blatant murder is another. I mean, everyone is seeing it. And as you said here, these young guys are also even experiencing their interaction with the police department. So in making, I guess, a choice, they're learning the politics and hopefully the history that is continuous around this whole, if we want to call it issue, challenge that we have as African people in the Americas.
Yeah, I think that, because he openly went after Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, disinvited them to the White House. He made statements that he didn't intend to go anyway. I think his partner on the team, one of the other stars on the team, Kevin Durant, said the same thing, that he didn't intend on going. LeBron James sent out a tweet went after the president made his statements and his comments. If I can find them here, I had it. It says on LeBron James' tweet, he said, "You bum." Stephen Curry already said he ain't going. So therefore, ain't no invite going to the White House. Nobody's going to the White House. Going to the White House used to be a great honor until you showed up. So, you know, now you see some of these young people not only showing their displeasure to certain aspects of this system of white supremacy, but firing back with statements. You know, we talked about on Friday when we had Brother Oshie and Dr. Rogers as guests about the fear or the apprehension of some of our people to respond to comments made by white folks. You see a little different spirit among some of these other young people coming along, which is good, because that type of attitude that some or the narrative that they spread about some of our ancestors turning the other cheeks and letting white folks just say anything they want to. We spent 8 years of seeing President Obama just take anything he wanted to from white folks like that was some type of badge of honor. They talked about him, talked about his wife being an ape in high heels, talked about his daughters, how they dress like ladies at a night, you know, and he never said anything about it. You know, I don't know how that's supposed to be a badge of honor, because I wouldn't want to raise a young man to be taking guff from anybody. He got to learn to stand up for himself. I can't be there with him all the time. So if he's going to be a man, he's going to learn to stand up for himself. I think we play a clip with Dr. Martin Luther King in his later days, before he was murdered, told black folks, don't let anybody take your manhood, about telling black people to stand up. That was different than the other narrative that he was telling. Go ahead.
Is a piece also, Naeem Akbar has a musical lecture kind of CD that he put out a few years, several years ago. And manhood was one of the issues that he was raising. And it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, during this World War One piece, that was one of the issues that African-American men were dealing with as far as you said, the climate of trying to the South particularly, but really throughout the country, take away African-American manhood and them being afraid by going to war and fighting in a war where they will actually be killing white men, that would instill them with the sense of self-pride. That's what was white military generals' fears and congressmen. But it was all, but on the African-American side, it was being able to re-emphasize their manhood by actually going and not out of just patriotism, but recognizing that this is to show that they had what it takes to be military soldiers or to be soldiers and to fight for something. You know, so manhood is a serious issue that we have always been addressing in America, and on one side trying to take it away and on the other side reasserting it. And mouthful mighty Trump is in trying to drum up that white backlash, that white supremacist value. What he said, our values, you know, that they have values that's different than any other American. And most of those Americans are American immigrants, where Africans who have been brought here, probably if you check the general population body, historical lineage, has probably been here longer than and most of those people who are here. So it's you know, something that we have to be always conscious of. And I hope those football players, as they become conscious, and Elliot, the thing that I see is powerful in this, their message, I mean, they're used for selling clothes, selling shoes, and getting responses. Here now, they're communicating a political message that African-Americans of all age groups are being exposed because they respect these guys. They respect these young men and what they feel. So now they're hearing and they have to self-reflect. So it's important that they become an educational tool to the general audience that views them of the African-American population. So I think that's a powerful understanding also.
And that's where the next level of education comes in with them, because some folks who are a little more experienced, a little more conscious, need to start wrapping their arms around these men and start teaching them about the area that they're going into, the minefield that they're dealing with, because they can't just think that kneeling down or raising fists is the be-all and end-all. They're going to have to take these things to another level economically. A lot of these young men control a lot of dollars. And if they start redirecting their dollars, that'll really shake the foundation. And see, that's the fear. Richard, you know, and I hope these young men don't start falling for this okey-doke. Because standing on the field locking arms with all these white players, and maybe about, I think the NFL is 75% black, but you got white, a monicum of white players on teams. Mm-hmm. And locking arms with these white players means absolutely nothing. The majority of these white players in the NFL are Republicans, and so are the owners. So they could give two shakes about any black athletes on there. The only thing they're concerned about is a football game and the team. And black folks got to realize that that crap is a game. After the game is over, then they're out here dealing with life. Those white folks go on and deal with another monicum of life. So they're going to have to realize that any protest, they're going to have to start learning how to take it to another level. And in order to do that, they're going to have to surround themselves with people that can really help them and have their best interests at heart. Some of these men have surrounded themselves with white agents, white women, white everything. They need to start changing that mentality.
And
start distancing themselves from Tom's. You know, and let me mention this also, because you had a Ray Lewis for months after they had him on TV. They couldn't take his face off television. In fact, that's how he got hooked up with Trump. He was criticizing, openly criticizing Colin Kaepernick and what he did, his disrespect to the flag, this, that, and the other. Every time you looked, they had a mic in his face. So when Trump wanted to do some things, he picked some hand-picked Negroes, and Ray Lewis was one of them. But now when they had they showed because different teams around the league had conducted protests, they showed the Ravens, and he's down there on his knees with his arms locked. See, that's what I'm saying. Some of these young people don't need to fall for no okey-doke with him or some of them other white guys on the team, because some of these black guys is just as dangerous as some of these white ones.
Mm-hmm. Whatever will give them the notoriety or give them the opportunity to be one upman on someone else. You know, and change, flip the car to flip just as easy as we turn the lights on with the switch. You know, whatever will make it work. And thinking that we'll have no memory, as you just brought up, that we seen you when you were on this side of the coin. Now you're going to act like you're on the other side of the coin. Elliot, the other thought that came as you were saying that, or, you know, and listening to you, was that at the same time, one thing in relationship to the athletes and as a political messaging is the question about healthcare, because wasn't it, and I'm not a student in this, but wasn't it also just a football player who was just acknowledged that had some kind of, from playing football, mental impact on his brain because of playing football? And doesn't the, not only police brutality, which Kaepernick started a message to bring in relationship to what's going on, but just the whole question of how unequal the healthcare is in this country. And they recognizing that they're, you know, with all the money they have, their game is dangerous to them.
Let's grab a couple of these calls here because I see the board is filling up. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, are you there? Are you there?
Decatur.
Let me move on from him. Maybe he stepped away from his line. Let's go to another caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Great. Yes. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Abdul Malik, and I'm calling from One Click Philadelphia Incorporated.
Hey, Brother Malik, listen, I want you to hold on. Stay with us. I see you up here. Stay with us because I want to dedicate some time for what you want to tell the listening audience. So just you can hear the program, so just stay with us. I'll put you back on hold. And when we take our break,
problem.
I'm going to bring you on board. So just stay with us.
All right.
Let me take a couple other calls. Let's go to 267. 267.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
Yes,
how
sir.
Are you, sir?
Great.
Good. Brother Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How you doing now?
Everything is good. You know, I think people misunderstood Kaepernick's social protest. He was not saying not to salute the flag, even though you and I and Richard know that the flag stands for suffering, slavery, and death. We know that. His problem was the social construct of racism and our youth being shot. Every time he turned around.
No, he was saying that he wasn't going to salute the flag. You said he wasn't saying that. He was saying that he wasn't going to salute the flag. You said he wasn't saying that. No,
right.
he clearly was saying that he wasn't going to salute the flag, and he didn't.
My thing is that they're switching in that social construct of racism and stating that you're saying that he's saying that he won't salute the fat because what's going on with the killings of youth around the country? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's what he said. I'm quite sure you heard he made plenty of statements. He wasn't hiding. That's what he said.
Okay. Well, we know that slavery, that the flag represents suffering, slavery, and death. His position is correct. Okay? I go with his position. And it's a nice, it's a ripple effect. I hope it goes on and it's transformed to other things. We got so many problems in our community. I want to get into, if you don't mind, I see Richard went and did a little tour of the cemetery and talked about the World War One people, African Americans that fought in it, and every war that we fought in America. I want to get to the Vietnam War. I've been looking at this program on PBS for the last week, and I was told that it was on before that. I missed a lot of it, unfortunately. I plan on getting the tape. And in a situation like that with the Vietnam War, how so many youth were sent over to that country to fight for a cause they didn't know anything for. The American government knew they couldn't win that war. At the same time, what was going on was the distribution and selling of narcotics in and out of harbors of Vietnam. This is now being brought under the microscope. This is one of the best documents I've ever seen by Ken Burns. One of the best documents I've ever seen on the Vietnam War, period. Now that we see a situation like that, the devil has no new tricks. If he does this now, he's going to do this in Afghanistan, any other war coming up. My thing is that are the people conscious of their past to find out what's going to be going on in the future? I'd like to know you and Richard's opinion on this situation with the Vietnam War. And have you watched this, Richard? I know Elliot has watched a couple episodes of it. I like to know your opinion of the Vietnam War and us fighting, you know, anybody fighting in it. And what was your opinion, Richard? What was your opinion, sir?
I haven't seen it yet. But Elliot had told me about it. You're speaking about it. And I've heard other people who have seen it and are praising the work Ken Burns has done with it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Your opinion, Elliot?
Well, I do agree that it's a very good documentary on the Vietnam War. The guy Ken Burns, even though he's white, and a lot of whites try to whitewash different things, I do give him credit where it's due. When the guy does his documentaries, at least he puts the information out there and you take it the way you want to take it. So he put a lot of information out there in reference to the Vietnam War, what was going on behind the scenes, what was going on between Johnson and his advisors, the things that they knew about and didn't tell the public. And just like you said, the other things that was going on behind the scenes. I see the same thing going on in Afghanistan. It's no coincidence that this opiate abuse done exploded over the past few years, being that they've been entrenched in Afghanistan. I think that they were always funding the Taliban. They were funding the Taliban when they were fighting Russians. They didn't have no problem then. But it was clearly known that the Taliban didn't want to deal in poppy or opium. They didn't want to deal in drugs. So now that America's in there, the Taliban now is not the ally that they were using against Russia, but now it's an enemy. They want to get rid of the Taliban because they got other things that they want to do with all that poppy and things that they're growing to explode the drug trade. So it's similar to Vietnam with heroin being pushed all in these neighborhoods. They glamorize different stuff that happened with heroin exploding in black communities. Frank Lewis and other people went up there in New York with all that heroin pushed, and he was supposedly getting it straight from Vietnam. Those things didn't happen by happenstance or coincidence.
Very good. Well, I'd like to thank you for highlighting this to the audience because the last episode is tonight, 8 o'clock, and I'll be having this documentary under the microscope, and I guess the next time we talk, I'd like to bring up the end of it. You guys keep up the good work.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Indeed.
All right, take it out.
Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing. Hey, Brother Richard.
How you doing now?
And I'm going to say, assalamu alaikum to our dear brother Abdul Malik and stuff, to give him the Muslim greetings and stuff.
He can hear you, brother, but he's not on yet, but he can hear you.
Praise be to Allah. Brother Elliot, before I talk about this police situation and the dummy in the White House, the real dummy, Fred Sanford, say, you big dummy, you. Before I talk about that dummy, Elliot, you know, you might be, and I know you're going to probably say, Joe, you're going a little too far. Elliot, you might be this century's version of a Paul Robeson, a Renaissance man.
Yeah, okay.
I told you, Brother Elliot, but I'm going to tell you why I say that. Because you're a social activist. You're a credit. You're a businessman. You're a father. You're a person of the community. You're a fighter for our people. So you might be in the league of Paul Robeson as far as being this century's version of a true Renaissance man, Elliot, and you're an athletic type guy too. So I think that counts as kind of like a Renaissance man. I know you're more too humble to say it, but you know I'm saying it, okay, Elliot.
Okay.
I'm saying it, okay. All right. I know you're humble, brother. That's all good. But anyway, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, when you were speaking earlier, Rick, you said about the police situation and with these black athletes. How many times, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, you know, I've said this many times. I said, if we can, if me, you, Brother Richard, Elliot, Brother Timothy, who just got off, you know, Brother Jay, all the good brother Marcus, all the good brother, even the sister Sarah, and all the people that's part of the Time from the Wicked Ordinance and stuff. I don't have time to name everybody, it'd be all night, but all the ones that support our people and support our show and support our people and support Time from the Wicked and Brother O.C. Show and Dr. What's the other brother? Doctor, what's the brother you had? Dr. Rogers. All these people that support these brothers. If we could all get out, if all of us conscious brothers could get with some of these young black athletes and stuff, whether it be from football, basketball, baseball, hockey, boxing, it doesn't matter what the sport is. They still, like you said, for the most part, young black men in their 20s, and even some of the older brothers that play sports that's been around, the veterans for a while, they still, even if they're in their 30s and 40s, still young black men in the sense of the word. If we could talk to some of these brothers and sisters, even some of the sisters for that matter, I guarantee you, Elliot and Brother Richard, they've been accosted by the police. Because, like I said, the only difference separates them between me and you, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, is they got more money than we got. But when they leave these sports arenas, and this is important that we can't miss this point, when these sisters and brothers leave these sports arenas, they still black people. Like you said, Elliot, these white athletes who they locking arms with, they go to another white world when they leave the arena. But these brothers and stuff still black. Even with all their money, they still black. So when they leave these sports arenas, they get into their Maseratis, their Lexuses, their Mercedes, their Cadillacs, you know, whatever, their SUVs, their expensive automobiles. These racist white cops stop them and harass them. I'll bet you, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard, many of these brothers, a lot of them, like you said, Ellen, you hit the nail on the head. A lot of these brothers been told about, because they surround themselves by white people, white agents, white women, white managers, whatever. And these white agents always try to de-black them. You get my drift, Ellen Richard?
Mm-hmm.
They try to de-black them, tell them brothers don't, you know, support that black stuff, and then some of them brothers so misguided they listen to it. So many of them brothers that's been mistreated by the law enforcement, a lot of them haven't came public because they've been told by their white agents, if you talk about the police call you a nigger or they put a gun in your head, they're going to look at you as a troublemaker. So just keep on getting your paycheck. Let me handle it. I work behind the scenes. I handle it for you. So them brothers haven't came forward. But I bet if we could talk to them brothers off the record, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, just brothers from man to man and say, look, we ain't going to blow your cover, but just rap to tell us what really happened. I bet you 9 out of 10 brothers and 8 out of 10 sisters will tell you they've had some kind of altercation with white law enforcement. How much you want to bet, Ellen Richard?
It's no bet. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no doubt in my mind because, again, they still black when they leave that arena and stuff like that. But see, what these brothers and sisters need to realize, like you said, Ellen, is that, you know, and we got to get behind the sisters and brothers, like you said, that show courage and stand up against Trump and his white racism. But like you said, they got to take it to another level because they're going to get backlash, and we got to stand behind them and let them know, like Minister Farrakhan said, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan said, our unity is more powerful than any white any nuclear bomb these crackers can ever throw at us. Our unity is more powerful, but we got to let them sisters and brothers know you stand up like black men and women, like Dr. King said, and you quote him so eloquently, Brother Elliot. Don't let nobody take your manhood, and that goes for the sisters, too. Don't let these crackers take away your womanhood. So we stand up behind these sisters and brothers. They'll get stronger. See, it don't help when you have Negroes like Jim Brown turn into a coon at this late age stage in his life. If Jim Brown shows strength and get back to the old Jim and stand up and stuff, that'll get his young brothers and sisters more courage. So, like you said, we got to get behind them and let them know we love them, we support them, and when the whiteys come after y'all, we got your back and stuff. Because like you said, LA, these brothers got to learn how to use the economic power and stuff. Because that's what I love about St. Louis, and I hope, LA, in the not-too-distant future, you can get some of the actors from St. Louis, Ferguson area, and especially in light of what happened with this cracker judge and this devil cop, you know, killing the brother down there. Because one thing the brothers and sisters said, and I said we had the final card, they got Dick Gregory on the front. They said they got Baba Dick Gregory. And one thing the brother said to a man, and I like how the brother said, he says, in Ferguson, we was emotional. He says, now we are seasoned activists. He says, we're going to make the white power structure pay economically. He said, we're going to hurt them economically. See, Ellie, that's the way you got to do it, man. Hit them crackers in the pocketbook. You know what I'm saying? You got to punish them because the white man is loves his dollar. He's the only person on this earth that in his currency put in God we trust on the currency because these devils love the almighty dollar. So you got to hurt them downtown businesses in St. Louis. Hurt them their commerce, their banking, everything. Hit them whatever you can hit them at and stuff economically and stuff. Bring them to their knees. Then Dr. King showed you that back in the 50s that it definitely can be done. So we definitely got to move out because, like you said, I'm not close with this last couple of comments so Brother Abdul Malik and other people get on. See, when that devil spoke in Alabama, you hit the nail on the head. He was speaking to his own racist white brethren. He know the devils he was talking to. He didn't have to say black unless you dense. You knew who he was talking about. So he was telling them to the NFL owners who are all white, translated, put the niggas in their place. You hear me, my brothers?
Yeah.
That was Trump's translation. Put the niggas in their place. That's bottom line. That's what he was saying to them and stuff like that. But I just love all the, you know, the brothers and stuff that stand up, saying to hell with this devil. I like what LeBron, like you say, called him a bum. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. These brothers need to continue to speak out and show, because this is what Muhammad Ali stood for. Jim Brown, before he went awry. This is what Johnny Sample, Brother Esau, the late, great Johnny Sample. What's the brother play for? Cookie Gilchrist. I mean, I could just go on. Tommy Smith, John Carr, all these sisters and brothers stood strong. So it's a disservice when you see Jim Brown turn away. He did at this late age. But I hope Jim get it back, get his mojo back. But bottom line is that these sisters and brothers, we got to back them. They got to continue to stand up and fight against this white system, because at the end of the day, Elliot, the life they say in the Richard, it ain't just black people in particular, the life they save at the hands of these racist white bigot cops could be their own life. So they got a stock. They got skin in the game and stand up for what's right. And last point, Ellen Richard, is this. You know, the house Negro, ain't gonna call him a Negro, he's a nigger. The house nigger was here last week, Ben Carson, Uncle Ben. And that disgraceful pick, that's why I hope some kind of way that brother, what's the brother's name? I think y'all had on the other week. I love that brother. What's it? Brother Asa. But I hope Brother Asa Khalif and Brother Isaac and them is listening right now, because they would have loved this picture. They had the picture of the house nigga, Ben Carson, and that phony Negro that's supposed to be our city council president, Dow Clark and William Hite, that disgraceful Negro who they bring in here to destroy black schools from Prince George's County. All of them was on the front page of the papers, hinting and grinning with Uncle Ben Carson when he cut the ribbon at that school and stuff. I mean, it was just a disgraceful picture. And them niggas got together, Ellie, with the white power structure to make sure that Ben Carson did not see any of the protests. Now you're talking about infringing on somebody's rights. The people have a right to protest and assemble peacefully. Don't you know, Ellie and Richard, that when Uncle Ben was here last week, that the protesters wasn't allowed within a 5 or 6 block of where he spoke at that school? Wasn't allowed. Nowhere near. They had it all. Police had it all blocked off. Hell, they don't even do that much for the president sometimes, you know. But they, for this nigga, they made sure that the protesters couldn't give that Uncle Tom nigga an ear for what he should have heard last week. So we see clearly what them niggas is up to. Like I said, and that's why I was so glad, and I told Brother Ace and Isaac when it was on with Charlotte the other week, I was so glad they gave Dow Clark an ear for it, because he's a disgraceful Negro, and that's why people stand the condition we stay in, because we keep on supporting Negroes like Dow Clark, you know, Curtis Jones Jr. and all these Uncle Tom handkerchief head Negroes, do Rosita Youngblood, they do nothing. They do nothing Negroes. We need to be supporting people like you said, they got the spirit of a Dave Richardson, a Cynthia McKinney, somebody got that ain't afraid of white folks. Support them sisters and brothers. The brother down in Mississippi, Brother Charlie, who's mayor of Jackson, sisters and brothers like that. But no, we keep supporting these spineless, gutless Negroes who all they do is sell our people out every chance they get. And that's why our people stand in condition we stay in. But again, I'm hopeful, Brother Ellis, because when I see people like Brother Young, Brother Charlie out there in Jackson, Mississippi, the brother over here in Newark, New Jersey, the mayor over here, when I see young activist brothers like that, they do give me some rare hope. So that's why I keep on trying to remain, you know, somewhat cautiously optimistic and stuff. But go ahead, Elliot and Richard, thank you for your time. And I'm looking forward to Brother Abdul Malik and what he has to say and all the other, you know, listeners of Time from the Awakening. Thank you for your time, Brother Elliot and Richard.
All right, take care,
man. Thank you for your call. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, callers is on hold. I want to stay with us. We're going to add to the conversation a brother here in Philadelphia that's doing some things in the community that I think our listeners need to know about. We'll be right back, and you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Are you one of the million conscious black people who believes that we have the collective wherewithal to affect real economic and political change? If so, band together in solidarity by joining the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Choose leadership that will work for the best interests of black people. We can no longer sit on the sidelines and expect things to change for the better without a significant number of black people playing a pivotal role in that effort. Will you be one of the million that recognizes that black dollars matter? Are you that person who believes it's time to leverage our votes for reciprocity from politicians? If so, then you should join the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, with members in 29 states and growing every day. We encourage you to sign up and help spread the word by sharing our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. That's IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
Yo, throw that Bobby Hymn and DVD in the garbage, man.
Come on, pass me that water, man.
Yeah.
Speak to him, Lord.
Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. away from his peers, away from his queen, away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
You gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete.
That's
the breadwinner. When the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
What happens when they can get it for cheaper?
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Like, wow.
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
You gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character. And whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
Whoa. White supremacy has struck a deadly blow. But our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Stop talking.
And whether you fully comprehend or not, you're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man.
Stand up, man.
And it cannot be defined by our natural adversary.
Clean up.
For his ways are not ours.
Nah.
Do we allow our boys to be feminized?
Hell no.
Do we allow our girls to be masculinized?
Hell no.
Because sheep get on the defensive? Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Stand strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother.
Casket drop.
But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind the devil's love doubt.
Yeah.
And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's wartime.
Cypher! Peace. Black
power manhood. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open forum this evening. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. But before we do that, we're going to bring on a local activist here in Philadelphia that's doing some things in the community that can be a blueprint to other communities around the country. I was told about this brother, my brother Sabor Muhammad, an activist here in Philadelphia that I totally respect. His work and track record in the community speaks for itself. And to be honest, I wasn't aware of what the brothers were doing, but I'm glad to have Brother Malik with us on the line this evening to talk about the group that he's a part of, One Click. Brother Malik, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Listen,
I'm glad. Who am I speaking to, Brother Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Hello, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm Abdul Malik, also known as Anthony Wilson, and I'm glad that you gave me an opportunity to speak about One Click, Philadelphia Incorporated. This idea was born about a year, year and a half ago. He had a lot of brothers who had done time in the penitentiary.
Okay.
Some brothers was fortunate not to make it to the penitentiary, but they also caused a lot of devastation in the neighborhood. And as you know, historically, gangs, they separated us as far as territories or cliques in Philadelphia. Well, some of these brothers decided to go from neighborhood to neighborhood. And the name of your show is really perfect when it says it's time for an awakening. Because that's exactly what happened. It was time for an awakening. Some of these brothers say it's time for us to get together and try to heal and repair some of the devastation we caused. Because most of us come out the 60s and the 70s, and we sit back and we see all the things that the youth is doing. We decided to say, listen, if brothers who were mortal enemies can come together in peace, because in our group you may be standing next to somebody who killed your brother or who shot you. And we decided that it's time to put our differences aside, and it's time for an awakening and heal these young brothers. So what we decided to do was have a family reunion, a reunion of reunion. And this is just a kickoff. This is just going to be the beginning. But let me give you the date of that reunion.
Go ahead.
It's going to be September the 30th, 2017, at Memorial Hall, 42nd and Parkside. It's going to be from 10 to 7 p.m. We're going to have drill teams coming through. We're going to have an African cultural stage. We're going to have a youth stage. We're going to have a DJ playing oldies for those who want to bop and cha-cha. But the idea is not just to give another free hamburger or another hot dog. The idea is to be able to speak to the youth, because it's about the youth. And to give you an example, I go visit people in the penitentiary, and I'm just going to make, I try to make this as short as possible. It's a brother who I've known all my life. He's 68 years old. And the last time I seen him was about 2 months ago, and he asked me a question. He said, how many years do you think I have in the street? Now, he's 68. He said, I got 10 years in the street. But when he heard about some of the stuff that One Click was doing, he said, you know what? It made me think. And he pointed to one of the guards. He said, I'm tired of paying his mortgage. He pointed to another one. He said, I'm tired of sending his kids to school. So now, instead of bringing devastation to the youth when they come into the penitentiary, he said, I'm going to do everything in my power to help enlighten them so they don't continue to make the same mistake I make. And anything that I can do from inside to help y'all on the outside, I'm willing. And if God is willing to give me the opportunity to come outside, I'm there with you. You know, to give you an idea, it's just a unified leadership for the collective neighborhood strength. So One Click is not just about a reunion. It's not just about a cookout. It's about bringing people together. And again, I like the name of your show, because it is time for an awakening. Do you have any questions for me before I continue?
Yeah, Brother Malik, like I said before, I wasn't aware of what you men were doing until Brother Sabor kind of pulled my coat to it. Talk about the struggle there, if it was a struggle. Talk about
In a way it was. I'm glad. Like I said, well, we were actually organized about September the 26th, 2016. You know, becoming a Pennsylvania nonprofit corporation.
Okay.
And what happened, and one of the brothers, he don't want any recognition, but I have to give his name, a guy named Bo from Zulu Nation. And one of the guys from Woolen Avenue, Ant-Man. Ant-Man did about 38 years in jail. And what I'm so amazed, because he came out of jail willing to help. And he had life. He was one of these brothers who had life. And from what I can gather, he got life for a crime he didn't commit. But you know what? Instead of him being bitter, he said, let me reach back. So he had joined different groups and different organizations, but he didn't see them moving the way that he felt like they should move.
Okay.
So again, they went around from neighborhood to neighborhood. Because as you know, in Philadelphia, as a matter of fact, I was at a cookout with 30 Fanars yesterday. You know, each neighborhood usually have their cookout. But him and a couple of guys like Bo Zulu, they go to different. We go to Morocco's cookout, 12th and Poplar cookout, 58th and Ose, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was try to bring these brothers together. And of course, you know, it's a struggle, because I don't know if you're from Philadelphia or not.
Yeah.
Traditionally, you know, Philadelphia is a cliquish city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have some corners who didn't want to join, and that's okay. Because it's not about the difference. This is about what we have in common. You have some other groups who may not want to join, but that's okay. Because our mission is about bringing people together and trying to reach the youth. And I'm quite sure there are a lot of different groups doing the same thing. But to bring these different gangs together, or former gang members, I mean, most of us are in our 60s now. We have a few brothers who are a little young. I'm 64 myself.
Okay.
But you know how it's hard to change your paradigm. It's hard to change people once they got a certain age. And when I seen these brothers working hard to bring light to a situation, I mean, we're looking at situations where murder is out of control, where instead of murder being the last option, it seems to be the first option for some of these younger people. I grew up in an area where you could fight a little bit. You may get moved on, but you live to see another day. I'm not saying it was no murders, but not to the level that it is today. But again, I heard some of your programs. That's probably because our neighborhood wasn't flooded with the type of weapons that they have today, that they have access to. I grew up in an era where people had to make guns for the most part, zip guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had a 22 or if you had a 38, you was the dude, you know. But again, yeah, it's been a struggle, but it's been a struggle that's well worth it. And we've reached out to quite a few people. And I heard the caller earlier mention Curtis Jones, but I'll tell you, Curtis Jones has been one of the few people who stepped up. Because where we're having it, it is in his area.
Okay.
Curtis Jones, and I must give kudos to Janie Blackwell. I mean, this isn't about being political, but there are some people, you know, that is going to want to come on later on, but I'm talking about the people who stepped up
who helped
in the beginning.
Okay. Okay.
Now,
Brother Malik, and I'm going to pass the mic to Brother Richard in a second. The young people that you men are trying to reach, well, that we all are trying to reach, to be honest. Is it difficult? Because, and I preface it like this. Some of these young people, as you know, are coming up in a home where there is no father or father figure. So some of the women are doing the best they can to raise these young boys. But these young boys need a man in their life, or they'll pattern themselves. They'll look at manhood and pattern their mindset after illusions, maybe TV figures or movie figures instead of somebody real. How difficult is it trying to reach some of our young men that don't have a father in their life? I know that initial contact with some of our young men is reluctance. I've experienced it to a certain extent. But I think a lot of our young men are very receptive to older black men being in their life, especially when they see that you really care about them. Talk about your experiences trying to reach our youth and some of the things that they ask you, some of the things that you sense that they need. Talk about that experience.
Well, because this particular group is just getting started, and that's why we're kicking it off.
Okay.
The cookout, and we're inviting the youth. We're having a youth stage. We want the youth to express themselves. But personally, I belong to other groups like Hands Across Philadelphia. And what we would do, we would reach out to the youth as far as essay contests, or we would go to the school board and try to get the school board involved. You know, we would have a march against violence from, you know, to give you an example, we first started from 52nd and Woodland up to 52nd and Jefferson. Then maybe from 52nd and Baltimore to 52nd and Jefferson. And you got some people said, listen, one more march. But what we was doing is bringing attention, and we were getting the youth involved. We were getting the youth to walk with us. We were getting the youth to talk with us. And you're absolutely right. And what we found out, because, you know, I personally talk with quite a few young people, and one of the things that the young people are saying is that you're taking something away. You want us to stop selling drugs, or you want us to stop doing this. But what are you offering us? What are you giving us? Now, with One Click, because the majority of the brothers in this organization have spent a lot of time in jail, but a lot of them have developed a certain amount of skills. So one of the things that we want to offer is apprenticeship program. We want to offer jobs, but not just any type of job. We want to prepare the youth. So when we try to take one thing away from them, we'll have something else to offer. I've talked to principals from schools, and they're willing to allow us to, as long as a person can pass a certain clearance, you know, as long as they don't have anything to do with messing with children or nothing, they're invited to come on in and talk to the youth, because they know the youth need an example. And it's so strange because some of our youth, and I was young at one time, we seem to idolize, you know, rather than, you know, idolizing the person who went to school and, you know, got a college degree and maybe became an attorney. They relate better to somebody who overcame some of the same adversities that they've overcome.
Okay.
You understand? Because the first thing they say, well, you don't understand. You haven't been where I've been. And for the most part, even those of us who have been in trouble in the past, we don't. Because we didn't grow up in an era where we may be second or third generation crack children. You know, not to just specifically, you know, point out any particular person. But, and then we're caught up in a system. And as I was saying, even the people in jail, when they come, when the youth come through now, you have groups of people who do want to greet them and try to talk to them. You need to start trying to get out of here, not making a career. Because one of the brothers I talked to, they hit him with the career criminal act some years ago, 50 to 100 years, and he got out in 17 because he was smart, and he learned all this while he was in jail. But do you know how long he stayed out of jail? He didn't even stay out of jail a year. Now he's been back for 16 more years. Now he realizes, he said, listen, instead of blaming the system, instead of blaming everyone else, I needed some type of help. And he said, now I'm willing to get it. But he's 68 years old. So hopefully we can get that same message to the youth. Hopefully we can reach them where they are.
Okay.
You know, we have to go where they're at. And we have to be more understanding. And what I found out, it's a level beneath us who they can, when I say beneath us, I'm talking about an age. It's a level, you know, maybe 20 or 30 years younger than us, who may have a better opportunity to relate to some of the youth. So that's where we're at as far as the youth are concerned. But we're also, as far as this one click thing, before I don't want to use up all your time, one of the things that we invite them to come out to do, we're going to have what we call Philly-style boxing. And it's a guy named Bub. He's a trainer from 21st and North. And Chucky Mills from 15th and Oxford. You know, they're boxing trainers. Now, we want to have, like I said, what we call Philly-style boxing. Hopefully we can get, and regardless, people might say boxing is violent, but at least you live to see another day. We're going to have drill teams. We want to have a drill team coming up. And I know you may have some more questions, but as long as I have enough time, you know, to give out some numbers.
You
have any more questions?
You got some time. You'll be all right. Brother Richard, jump in.
No, I, you know, Brother Malik, one thing, Brother Elliot told me that, you know, you possibly may be coming on, it reverted back, and I'm glad we're in this, somewhat in the same age group. So I remember, the gang wars and, the whole thing of, as you said, zip gun making, breaking antennas off of cars, using them as weapons, and switchblades.
Lock of wood and a
right.
door latch and rubber bands.
Right, were the tools. And at that time, they were a frightening time. And you answered the question I had, because I think that we always need to put our, when we're trying to solve a problem, and that's a generational thing, we always need to continue to put it in a historical experience. I mean, you know, just from a historical context. So you see that one thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, the economics of then gangs isn't the same as the economics now. And you gave the example of the brother said, when you take it away from me, what are you going to give me? Is that true then? I mean, is that a true statement that the gang formation then was about just groups of men and pride, young men and pride with each other, compared to that this was an enterprise that you're trying to protect and you have access to more lethal weapons than then?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I also agree with the fact that, and honestly, I'm a little cynical, because to me, I it's the system, and whether we're conscious of it or whether we're unconscious of it, to a level or to a degree, we all feed into the system, because this is big business. If the system doesn't really want to stop crime, the system don't want to get rid of crime. I can remember back in the 70s reading articles about, just to give you an example. It was a place in the mountains. It was virtually no crime. They had plenty of business. They had coal mines. They had the steel mills. Everything was going. Now, once the coal mines shut down and the steel mills shut down, crime rose about 95%. And this area, nobody looked like us that lived there. And then I continued to read years later, and I found out they had a new commodity. And what do you think that new commodity was?
Oh, you know it was us.
It was us.
Mm-hmm.
They built prisons in some of these places, names that you've never heard of. And now the communities are thriving. But But some of these prisons are even privatized. And I heard Jesse Jackson say, regardless of what anybody may personally think about Jesse, but about 20 years ago, I heard him say, once they start privatizing prisons and you can buy stock in it, then that means they have to do what? They have to keep these prisons filled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a business. Like I said, we have more guns. We have more drugs. And I talk with a police officer because I work with a couple of different groups, and we do rallies against drugs, against violence. But you know what a police officer told me? If I lock up the same person 15 times in a month, you know, the next time I see him, I might even ride past him because he keeps getting out. You understand what I'm saying?
Definitely.
It's a system. It's almost like the pharmaceutical company. If they were really trying to cure anything, would they continue to make money? It's about maintenance. They're not trying to cure anything. They're not trying to cure our social ills. They're not trying to cure any of our ills. But unfortunately, to a degree, we have to work within the parameters that we have. But to me, what is revolutionary is you see the majority of one click are ex-criminals on one level or another. They have awakened. They have awakened and said it's time for us to help stop this problem in our community.
And one thing that, I mean, and one thing in this here that I like in what y'all are doing in relationship to one click and getting together. And if I heard you right, the difficulty of even communicating within amongst our peers who were engaged to kind of still sit down our, what's that? Territorial allegiance,
at
our age, to set that down so that we can be able to come together. And I think that we have to, you know, continue to dialogue with each other to kind of figure out how we're going to do that, because that's the same problem that we'll have with, it seems, with young men who now have something that they're getting from this. And the question I wanted to ask, and again, it's not necessarily taken away, and I'm looking forward to the event that you'll have on September 30th, and having the opportunity to be able to speak to those young men that do assemble to hear this intergenerational dialogue. But I think that we also have to kind of continue recognizing the system and what it does and how it benefits. But how do we look at each other to try to overcome the obstacles within our peers and within the next generations that we're trying to communicate with? So the question I'm asking is, because in gangs we had leadership individuals. I mean, I heard, and I'm from South Philadelphia, but in North Philadelphia, Zulu Nation can be able to call together hundreds of men, young men, in no time. So there was a network of communication and leadership process. And the question I'm having, just to explore with you, is do you think that we have really talked to the leaders within this generation of commerce gangs so that we can be able to figure out what is it to negotiate with, if I'm making any sense? Because it is an organization.
You do make sense. And as far as one click, we've reached out to North Philly, South Philly, Germantown, 13th and South, Carpenter Street, 20th and Cater, as many gangs as we could. But to hear for what you just said, and let me answer this, and I'm not an expert on this, but a young brother, when I say a young brother, I guess he's about in his 40s. And he said, you know, old head, it's a good idea what you guys are doing, but you really can't reach them like I could. And I said, well, you tell me why. Because he said he belongs to a group or an organization that when they speak to the youth, they listen. And he gave me a little more detail about that organization and what I was told that they do listen. But I was also told it's about this because of a certain reason. Because some people understand that death, violence, and destruction is a deterrent to also making money, you know. And so I think the whole mindset has to be changed, which is going to be hard because you have people now, as you said, before it was about territory. If you're in my, I'm going to protect my neighborhood. You're not going to come in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. You know, this is my neighborhood. You're not coming into my neighborhood. But now it's more about commerce. You know, we have a business here. We have, you know, we have a product that we want to sell. And that's why the young person said, well, if you take that away from us, you know, I've talked with a few young people, what are you going to give us? This is why we're trying to develop apprenticeship programs. We're trying to connect with people who can offer real jobs. Even if you have to start out vending, whatever you have to do, we're trying to reach people on their level, and we're trying to create opportunities for our youth because we understand that as cliche as it may sound, they are our future. They are our future.
Mm-hmm.
They are our future.
And what you say, and if I could jump in on that point, as when you gave us the example of that town that used the commodity of our bodies, our black bodies, to finance through that prison. So they are our economic asset, you know, that we have lost control over. Because if the system, quote unquote, be able to take our economic asset and be able to, as you gave in that example, to create a livelihood, not just police officers or prison guards, but a whole community.
A whole community. You know, you have goods and services that the prisons use. You have houses that are being built. You have, you know, the prison, and it's not any place where we are except as the inmates.
Right. But I think that it's important that what y'all are doing, and again emphasizing what you'll be doing, and you know, on September 30th as that launch off point on both sides, getting us, as they call us, the old heads, but also trying to create and you identified that middle, I'm gonna call it middleman. I think until we look at it, that our communication is about organization, our social right. organization, especially when we talk about Philadelphia, because we are so quickish. And if you don't approach it effectively, then you won't get effective resource outcome. So the communication has to be that we have to look at, well, who are these people? But I think we can negotiate with them, because when we look at the broader, now you talked about a town, we talk about, what's this, gentrification? So even the environments that we're in, they are being refashioned, and those guys are losing that commercial enterprise of really killing us right in front of our faces.
Listen, let me cut in right there. When you say gentrification, and you're talking about our communities, and I heard the brother mention Sabor Muhammad, and I must give him kudos. He's another brother who likes to, you know, stay in the background. He don't like to be up front. But you know what Sabor did for the majority of the brothers in one click? Now, some of the neighborhoods accepted it, some of them didn't. He started teaching them about the RCOs, you know, the registered community organizations. You know, he started telling them, you know, go back to your neighborhood. You know, make sure you're aware when something is coming in your neighborhood, register as an RCO. And you know what? The majority of the brothers did that. So when I heard what you said about Sabor, I would go visit Southwest District Services, you know, way before One Click was even thought about, just to watch how they operate.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard some people complain because, oh, that's with the 5-0 gang or no women. But you know what I said? They're doing something.
Yes.
Do you
understand? Agree.
They are doing something. And most of the people I heard complaining, you know what they were doing? Nothing. And when I seen groups of men come together, naturally people are going to criticize. Why aren't women? Because the women have been carrying us for a long time. If you go into the churches, the mosques, wherever you went, it was the women. It's time for the man to stand up and take his rightful place. Because the world, the universe is out of whack. And that's only my personal feeling. I'm not speaking for one click right now. I'm speaking Abdul Malik, Anthony Wilson's personal feeling. It is time for the man to step up. And we're going to run into a lot of opposition because that means I'm going to be out the house. I've been married since 1977. I've been dating my wife since 1968. And as painful as it is, I've had guns in my stomach to my head many a time just to go visit her. Through the grace of God, I had people shooting at me with shotguns and hit the person behind me at her front door. So I understand the struggle of going to different neighborhoods just to go to work in different neighborhoods or to whatever, go to visit somebody. I understand that struggle because I lived it. Did I always turn out to be the best? Did I turn? No. But what I've learned is time for us to give back. What is your show called? It's time for what? It's time for an awakening.
Brother Malik, you know, it's a challenge for the men. It's a challenge for us because I'm not putting that weight all on the men at one click. It's a challenge for us to reach our youth. But like you said, it's about our survival. It's going to take a multi-prong approach to try to deal with this. But all of it is an education, whether it's teaching them a trade, whether it's developing a entrepreneurial spirit in them, because they already have it when they do mixing negative things in it. If you turn it to a positive thing where they can help the community, the forces that could be gathered together for negativity, those same type of forces can be garnered to patrol these neighborhoods to make the streets safe for our elders. See, these things, it's just a little tweaking that can be done with some of our youth to turn this whole thing on end. And it's going to take men coming together, coming up with ideas, choosing one or two ideas, and moving on them. Sometimes that's been difficult for black men because we've been conditioned not to work with one another. We all know this.
I agree. So, but if we, and I don't want to dominate the conversation.
Go ahead.
Just to give you a little background, back in 1968-69, you know, I came with a group of guys from Richard Allen Projects up Broad and Susquehanna. We joined an organization called CORE, Congress of Racial Equality. But what I found out after I joined, even though we were Congress for Racial Equality, we were getting paid to learn how to be black. You understand, to raise our consciousness, to be proud of what we were. Because if you know in them days, if somebody called you black, that was almost a fight. You know, you black son, you know, people want, and to be proud. And I understand that you got some groups, well, that's not a race, that's not this, and that's not a color. But just the fact, anything as we grew up, anything black was considered bad. But to say that now black is beautiful, you know, like, you know, to be just awakened to that, not to drop your head, not to look down at your feet, to be able to look the person in another person in the eye, another race in the eye. They didn't teach us religion, but one thing that I did understand was religious imagery. And when we're taught certain images, we're shown certain images, and we're told that this is God. And if you don't believe in him, you're going to die and go to hell. But none of them images look like you or look. I'm not going to assume you're black or a person of color. But if they didn't look like anybody that I've seen in my household or anybody that you went to church with, because even in the 60s, the churches were segregated. And I had to ask myself, you know, like the majority of schools I went through, they didn't look like me. And I found out that subconsciously we didn't realize that we looked at another group of people and we seen them as God.
Yes.
You have some people who would never admit to that.
Absolutely.
But the subconscious is powerful. If all you're shown, if everything you're shown, every image that you're shown that's white is good and that's black is evil, you begin to develop that. This has been a conscious thing against our people from the time we were brought over here. And some of their tactics have worked. But I will say this, the things that I was taught at the Congress of Racial Equality, I've lived long enough to see come true. I was taught about the John Birch Society in the 60s, some of these right-wing organizations taking their children up in the mountains to prepare for a revolution. Well, the revolution is here, but some of them, they've got smarter too. They understand there's a different type of revolution, and we're living it and seeing it every day. Every time 45 tweets something, their agenda, they are fulfilling their agenda. Mm-hmm. And I believe, and I can be wrong, because some of the things that I read where Dr. Martin Luther King was the FBI's most wanted list, but I never seen Elijah Muhammad there because he wanted separation. Dr. King wanted integration. And they would have never had to shoot a bullet if the black and the white come together, because that so-called pure white race would have never been the same. But as a minority in the world, they are stepping their game up, and it's time for us to step our game up. And what I believe One Click is doing on a local level, this thing can spread. It can spread statewide. It can spread nationally and hopefully internationally. And I'm quite sure this is not a new idea, because there's nothing new under the sun. But hopefully, as I heard one of you say, tweak it, hopefully we can tweak this. Hopefully we can come together. And hopefully we can have a unified leadership for collective neighborhood strength and beyond.
And, you know, the thing that Brother Malik and Ellie, if I may, I just, you know, inspired, because this is something for me I've been recognizing and that is necessary for Philadelphia for a long time, because it's the only way at the level that you're talking about and the level that you're working on. It's the only way all these other things, these ills, will be solved. And when I say the only way, is when we are able to communicate intergenerationally, be able to show what you're doing, I've done, and they can be able to hear it. And then we can be able to build something from that, because each generation has been segregated from itself. So the next generation don't even know what they're doing. You know, even if you got more tools, you're in the same matrix that we were in.
Wow. Because,
and we serve 15, 20, 30 years. You're going to serve 15, 20, 30 years. Because no matter whether you had $1 million and all we had was street cred.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree. And when you use the word matrix, it takes me back to that movie. I don't know if any of you seen The Matrix.
Yeah.
But what I got out of The Matrix, it you got a whole society who had no idea what was going on. They were just to and fro, you know, about their daily lives. But what was going on, it was a battle. And that battle is still going on. That battle, I mean, whether you want to call it good and evil, battle of principalities, and some of the things you can't see with your physical eye, but you can see it. You know it's there. You feel it. You know it's there. And what it's done is beat a lot of us down. You know, not to get on too many personal things, but September 23rd, I celebrated 38 years of sobriety. But I come from a point where I never, when I used to pray that when I die, please let me die high. So in order to come from that place to now wanting to help and raise the consciousness, not just of myself, my family, my neighborhood and beyond, I've seen a lot of things that helped me to understand what's going on in our world, and because you got to continue to battle through it. You have to continue to battle through it. I see where, and I'm going to use Dr. Martin Luther King's name again, where as a 15-year-old, I thought he was a coward. But as a 40-year-old, I said, that is a brave man. That is a brave man. Because I couldn't even imagine some of the things that he had to deal with, that he had to put up with. And he knew his life was on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to change, I mean, the world, not just for black people, but for the human race. But again, we need to start with self, because there is an attack on ourself, and we need to do for self. We need economic programs. We need social programs within ourselves. We need to be able to take all our tools and come together, put them on the table, and see who can best do what. And we need to not just educate the youth, but some of us need education as well, because we're crippled. When I talked to my friend of mine who's been in jail, he said, you know what he said? He said, all these years, I'm just realizing I needed some type of therapy. It don't have to necessarily be that man's therapy, but it's therapeutic, just him sharing some stuff. Because as most black men that I know, we don't talk. We don't share. We react. You understand? We react. You know, we think it's a weakness to share certain things. But he's 68 years old. He said, listen, it took me this long, but now I'm willing to help. I'm willing to do what I can do. And I hope more people feel like him. I hope there are a lot more people out there who feel like him, that they're willing to get dirty, get down on their knees, and do what they have to do.
Brother Malik, give out any contact numbers if any of our listening audience want to
sure,
come out to the one click.
First contact number, just in
good.
Case you don't get everything else. This is going to be the informational tables and booths. It's a brother named Kenneth. They call him Happy, and his number is 610-329-9299. Again, informational tables and booths, and he'll make sure everyone else is contacted. His name is Kenneth, a.k.a. Happy, 610-329-9299. And anybody who wants to help with security, Brother Farouk, that's F-A-R-U-Q, 267-755-8624. Again, Brother Farouk, 267-755-8624. Anyone who'd like to donate food, and I know beggars can't be choicy, but if we can, you know, whether it's beef or turkey, that's something that everybody can eat. Contact Sugar Bear from 21st and NARS, 267-345-8683. Again, Sugar Bear, 267-345-8683. Anyone who'd like to vend, one thing I can tell you, table vending, I believe, is only $35. Contact Umar. That's 267-235-6627. Or Vincent Johnson, a.k.a. Ant-Man, 215-821-0680. We're going to have an African cultural stage. Brother Shamari is going to be the MC. And anyone, you can contact me, Abdul Malik, at 267-939-1468. Again, Abdul Malik, also known as Anthony Wilson, 267-939-1468. We're going to have a youth stage. You can contact Bo at 267-230-0668. Bo, 267-230-0668. And we're going to have some oldies. You know, we're going to have an MC playing. We're going to have a DJ playing some oldie music. And you can contact Raheem at 215-606-7719. And we're going to have a youth stage. I know I've given out quite a few numbers. You can contact Miss Brenda at 267-475-8544. Youth stage, 267-475-8544. Okay, any more questions before we go?
Brother Malik, you know, I like how these things are broken down with tasks for everybody that volunteered to do it. One thing I want to point out, Brother Farouk there, that is over security.
Yes.
Listen, he wouldn't be doing it if he wasn't qualified.
Yes.
I guess he's going over things with the people involved, hopefully the young people, to show them certain things about how to conduct themselves, how to keep an eye on things.
We also, at the last meeting, we're also going to have some security working with him from the Nation of Islam as well.
Yes,
Brother Rodney Muhammad,
those are some of the things that really need to, I mean, I just agree with everything you men are doing. Those things and the tasks that is broken down. Richard, the way these tasks are broken down and men supervising these things, man, that's what's needed, Richard.
Yes, it is.
That's what's needed. And I hope these things, and I know.
We're calling this the Philadelphia reunion of reunions, but this is just the beginning. And I want to keep this in everyone's mind. This isn't just another free hot dog or free hamburger. We want to reach the youth. And at the same time, we want us to have a good time. But we have a message that we want to give to the youth.
Brother Malik, do you have a central spot where you have your meetings?
We've been meeting at different locations. We've been meeting at the Martin Luther King Recreation Center
at 25th
and Cecil B. Moore.
Okay.
And we also meet at King Sesson Recreation Center at 50th and King Sesson.
Okay.
And we've met a couple of times at the old Christie Recreation Center at 56th and Christian.
Okay.
But
all right.
I'll give you the one click. If anybody wants the one click PO box, I'll give that to you right now.
Go ahead.
It's one click Philadelphia Incorporated, PO Box 50491, Philadelphia, PA 19132. Again, PO Box 50491, Philadelphia, PA 19132. And the email address is oneclickphilly. That's one, the number one, CLICK, Philly, PHILLY, at gmail.com. And the phone number is 215-730-3010.
730, say that again, 3010.
215-730-3010.
Okay. All right. Brother Malik, before you leave us, let's grab a call in here. 646? 646?
Oh, what's happening, Richard?
Hey, sir. What's How up, you man? Doing? Is this Brother Jay?
Yeah, this is Jay.
Jay, did
no,
you
no,
want...
No, I was just calling in. I thought your desk was finished.
Okay, well, do me a favor. Just hold on. We're going to go to a brief break, and then we'll pick back up with the open forum.
All right.
Brother Malik, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, man. Keep me abreast of what's going on. I'll make sure that you get my number through Brother Sabor. And,
most definitely.
And we'll talk. I can spread the word. Can spread the word
and
through
brother,
time for awakening.
I thank you very much for this opportunity. Brother Samoa just hit me up earlier today. And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity and giving one click the opportunity to spread the word over the airwaves.
We'll talk soon,
thank
brother.
Thank you again. Right. Peace and blessings.
All right. We'll be right back. We still got a little time left in the program. Richard, you all right?
Yeah, I have to be gone soon, but I'm good now.
Good. We've got a little time left in the program for open forum. So give us a call, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your
your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy, it's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And I want to thank Brother Malik that was with us a minute ago to talk about One Click, the activities here with the brothers and sisters involved to try to bring youth and the older generation together to cure some of the ills that plague our community. Brother Richard, what the men are doing, hopefully this model, and you can see that it's been similar things done in other cities, but hopefully these things can spread because it's necessary for it to be done. Just like Malcolm said in that clip there, nobody's going to solve this but us. We have to come up with these situations and these solutions. We can't wait for anybody to do it. In the past, we've been waiting for government to do it. We've been waiting for benevolent white folk to do it. And we've been waiting on some type of magic Negro to come along and do it. But these things are going to have to be done by us and a collective us.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that, you know, the thing that that street, the street organizing, and you hear me keep using the word intergenerational organizing from that street perspective, is so really important because, you know, Elliot, you raise all the time about the disconnect between the political leadership and, or the religious leadership. Those are different community communities than the black community. But the street, what I call street community, that's the one that we are feeling most of the brunt of the economic deprivation. We're feeling most of the brunt of the educational or miseducational realities or skill development. We're feeling most of the brunt of, we're carrying most of the brunt of the health disparity. And until we can be able to figure out how we can communicate with each other to build things that doesn't supply the other people with wealth, but supply us with wealth, we'll always be in this here quandary. And, you know, it only through, when you look at history over the long view, you'll see that we did do this. But now it's so much necessary. But that street intergenerational dialogue or negotiating just has to happen, or nothing else can happen.
I agree. Let's pick up another call there before we start to wind things down. Let's go to 646 and bring Brother Jay back on. Brother Jay?
Hey, Richard and Elliot, what's going on, brothers?
Hey, brother.
Listen, man, what's wrong with this cracker in the White House, man?
Wait a minute. What do you mean, Jay?
What the hell is wrong with this cracker, man? Calling people son of a bitches and all of this. Has he lost his mind?
Well, hey. Listen.
Wasn't he supposed to be the head cracker in charge? You know, the cracker ain't supposed to behave and act like that out in public amongst the natives. You know what I mean? The white man ain't supposed to behave like that. You know, he's supposed to set an example. What is he doing setting an example like that? Something wrong with this cracker, man.
Yeah, well, you don't hear... You might hear a few black folks criticizing his speech or his terminology that he uses, but you don't hear a crescendo of white voices criticizing him.
No.
Democrats or Republicans.
Not
Not the political elite.
Exactly. And see, that goes to what Malcolm said in that speech over 50 years ago. Don't say, now he used the term Southern senators. I'm saying don't say, because I hear a lot of black folks on terrestrial radio, this Republicans, these Republicans, this Republicans. Don't say no Republicans. This is the government. This thing is the government. Democrats and Republicans. If they're white, it's the government. You don't hear no crescendo of voices condemning this guy's speech and how he talks, and it's not presidential. It don't show class. You don't hear, you hear black folks saying that. You don't hear white folks saying that.
He's dumb, bone-dock white trash, man. He's a hillbilly, at best. I mean, that boy is an absolute example of white trash, man. I mean, he's illiterate. He's what you call a pure asshole. At the highest level, you know what I mean? I mean, it's embarrassing. You got people like Charles Krauthammer. You know, supposed to be of the muckety mucksters.
Well, it ain't embarrassing. It ain't embarrassing to me. I laugh. It ain't embarrassing.
They don't even deal with them.
Yeah, well,
but this is what white men will give to you when they think that once they get him in office, he's going to benefit them on such a level. But let's look at this. He's been in office now for, I would say, 9 months, right?
Yeah.
Right. And in those 9 months, this dumb son of a bitch ain't been able to do nothing. He ain't been able to move forward agenda for them none whatsoever yet. You know what I mean? And you know they in the back rooms wheeling and dealing to the highest level that they can to make things do what they do. But they ain't been able to do it because he's so stupid that if they were to go about doing it, it would just absolutely turn the country upside down because he can't articulate it.
And you can't
do it.
But, Jay, you know, the thing that you usually raise, which they weren't having been able to do over the 8 years, was deal with the taxes, tax reform, right? That, you know, they haven't been able to deal with the debt. I mean, even in how they're going to deal with the debt issue. So him
but
as...
There hasn't even been a discussion on that.
Because they don't know what to do.
that's because he got them in a situation to where as they so discombobulated based on his ignorance and stupidity on guiding them that they can't even have conversations and discussions. How do you still 9 months later still try to sneak through the repeal of Obamacare instead of in the 9 months knowing that people ain't going to go for the okey-doke, try to figure out a way to make it better? But what's even worse, that's even more appalling, is the Democrats, those pieces of sugar honey I see, who don't go about the business of really governance, of going about the business of putting forward an agenda so that they could come in and scoop it all away. You know what I mean? That goes to show you how they hand in hand with one another.
Almost.
And how they end up with a bunch of pieces of garbage.
You're absolutely right.
They haven't even been in the position or placing themselves in the position to give the world or to give the country an alternative to this garbage. That shows you how bad and inept they are. All because, and I'm going to say this, that Negro Barack Obama. Because he put that piece of garbage, that Baba Louie, that's right, I said it, that piece of garbage, Baba Louie, Perez in over the flunky Ellison. That's right, Ellison's a flunky. That's all he is. But he's a good enough flunky that he would have worked hard for his white daddy, Bernie Sanders. And he wouldn't have done nothing to hurt Obama's side of this thing. But Obama's side would do everything in their powers to hurt Bernie's side. You see how wicked they are? And in the process, the American public is getting screwed over. And here it is 9 months later, Mammy's still on the circuit crying and bitching and moaning about how she was mistreated where here it is, nobody looking into all of the money she done stole around the world from Haiti and Africa and all of these other places.
Well, that's why she's out there. But that's why she's out there stumping around, Jay. She's getting ready to sell that book. She don't care enough.
Yes, because she got some more stealing to do. Or she don't want to really get exposed for the wicked tree that she really did. But that just goes to show you the wicked tree. And then you, like I said the other day, you got some Negro on the radio talking about he a damn pan-African trying to push the Democratic Party. It's a joke, bro. But we fall for it every single day. Now, you talking about we up in arms over a damn protest in a football game? About what he done said about some football players who allegiance ain't to black people at all, basically. Most of them got white women who making white women, poor middle class white trash women, family rich now, taking them into the upper class if they smart enough to keep that money and transferring that wealth over to the white side. Come on, man. I mean, we're silly, man. Negroes are insane, man. Negroes are insane.
This is television.
It's like a theater of absurd.
It's entertainment from 45 all the way through. It's just entertainment. And entertainment is the greatest weapon that the Western world has right now as the tool of propaganda.
But think about this. They just had, I think, the CBC Weekend or some nonsense
That's
how the Negroes put together with an agenda to a fight other than that nonsense that old girl Maxine talking about impeach Donald Trump. We gonna impeach Donald Trump. We gonna get rid of Donald Trump. Donald Trump ain't going nowhere.
Hey, Elliot, I don't know, RJ, did y'all hear the piece that I caught was her saying, don't ask what Maxine gonna do, you know. She said, that's good, Maxine. Go get them. Don't tell me, Maxine, to go get them. You go get them. Which only means that Maxine Waters knows these Negroes want to sit on the sideline, find somebody to, as you say, run that impeachment talk, but don't want to do nothing.
Hey, but you know what's so funny is Maxine knows if she get too much out of line, they'll bring back up some of her dirty work and spank her ass. You know what I mean? She know she had to do a lot of compromising and bending over and wiggling to get out of that mess her and her husband was in. And they know they got a lot more dirt on her for giving her children that nepotism game she got going on out there in California, paying her daughter and her grandchildren all of that money she paying them. So, you know, she know how far to go. Let's don't play no games, though.
Let's keep it
real gangster. You know what I'm saying? They all do. So, I mean, but the real thing is, ain't none of them got no plan or no agenda for black folks. They just want to make these Negroes think they got a plan and agenda. But here it is, you got a guy, still campaigning because he don't even know what to do as a president out there in front of a whole bunch of people calling people son of a bitches. I mean, that's incredible. Have you ever in your life would imagine somebody that's supposed to be the president telling somebody or telling some people to fire some son of a bitches? I mean, that's madness. You know what his problem is? I think his wife needs to start giving him some eggs. I don't think he's getting none.
Come on, Jay, that may be
his problem. I don't think she's serving.
Yeah, but you know, him come on,
at
Jay.
All, and he ain't been able to bring no hookers Jay, into the White House.
Jay,
to do his show.
Jay, you know, listen, we're on internet radio and we can say certain things, but let's keep, come on, we can use. Yeah, other
I mean, seriously, Elliot, something wrong with him.
I understand that, but come on, man. You got better.
You got more class than that. You know, we have a position in this country with how do you take this seriously? I mean, you got people that go on television and say some of the most outrageous things in the world, and then they try to justify it. And you know what always gets me mad is that they get the black voices to come on there and slick talk and master talk them. Do you know one of the finest Negroes that you could ever put on TV, the slick talk white man, is Michael Eric Dyson? All that Negro shit. I'm so happy that they pay that Negro to come on there and slick talk the white man. I don't know what to do. Oh, he's a master at it. I can't think of who is better than him. Reverend Al's not as good as he. He's losing it. He don't have it. He's not as sharp. Jesse don't have it because he's getting old. Your boy from Philadelphia, Lamar Hill, he's not as smooth. Cornel West, he could be smooth, but I think age is catching up with him. But no, man, I mean, Michael Eric Dyson is a master. I'm looking for some young cat to come up that got that type of gift to get. Do y'all have any in mind?
Y'all
witness any? Because, I mean, Michael Eric Dyson is a wordologist, a wordsmith. You know what I mean? He's like my man Plato Benjamin is when it comes down to writing. Plato Benjamin will serve you something with the words on paper, pen and paper. That's the way Eric Dyson is when it comes down to verbal boasting. Oh, man, he's a gymnastic teacher on the highest order. You know what I mean? And white folks just give it to him. They open themselves up for him to do his thing. And then, you know, they always got their little mammies that come along and they do their thing. You know what I mean? And then they got my Mama Louie, Anna Navarro. Oh, she's a special Baba Louie. Oh, I like her. I get a kick out of her. You know, because she's a Baba Louie on the chunky side. You know, so I could always know what happens once they get past 35, 40. That's what you got to look forward to. And she's funny. But, I mean, hey, man, we in some trouble, man, with this guy in office. 9 months in office, and we ain't got nothing to show for it. And now, what is going to happen with the debt ceiling? What's going to happen with taxes? What's going to happen with just about anything? And to beat it all, that beats Richard and Elliot calling people son of a bitches. He had the most classic line out of all of them, Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Now, what could be better than Rocket Man?
Don't worry.
Think about that.
He'll come up with something next week.
Than Rocket Man?
He'll come up with something next week.
How do you seriously? I mean, this just becomes more comical the more you think about. How do you call a world leader, Elliot and Richard, Rocket Man, on the national stage, on the world stage, at the UN, call another leader Rocket Man? Are you serious? And we're supposed to be taken seriously as a country and as a nation, and nobody questions the civility, the competency of this wingnut?
Well, Kim said he was crazy.
I mean, and you know, I saw the best article the other day when the guys made it the coolest thing in the world. He said, how could you expect Kim to ever give up his nuclear weapons when all he has to do is look at a picture of Muammar Gaddafi and what happened to Muammar Gaddafi once Muammar Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons? Case closed. Nothing else need to be said. As soon as Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weaponry, what happened to him? It was a wrap, wasn't it?
Yeah, we see what happened.
So what do you think is going to happen to Kim? And now, mind you, people don't even know that Kim got nuclear warheads and material on ships in the ocean. They don't even know that because the American public has absolutely no clue to really what's going on. But they got this guy talking about Rocket Man. But hey, listen, I just leave you with this. We are the greatest country on earth, led by the greatest leader on earth, Donald Trump. one of the most special retards that the world has ever produced, with orange hair looking like the son of the orangutan. And on that note, have a good night.
Thanks for your call, Jay.
Rocket Man. Remember that.
Yeah,
Rocket Man.
Yeah, okay. Later. Oh, man. Jay really lets that bother him, Richard.
Oh, man. It's difficult. It's, you know, I can understand for those who really want to see some change and you know, that they can be really upset. But, you know, Elliot, does it upset me?
No, it don't upset me either.
Again, when you look at America, I don't expect anything
less
from one leader to the next. I don't expect anything any different at any of the levels in the American society. I mean, I just don't understand. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I think that what we have to realize that you can see clearly the unraveling of this system that we live under before your eyes. Mm-hmm. I don't think our people need to be spend time worrying about what's going on here to the point of what we should do about it. I think what we should do about it is start conducting our own business,
right,
seeing what we're going to do to preserve our babies and our life moving forward. We were here long before this country was ever established, and we're going to be here long after this country is gone by the boards. So the thing is, how do we prepare for that? We can't prepare for that worrying about this man or what he's doing. Certainly, we can talk about it, and it's a conversation piece, but I'm talking about putting lock, stock, and barrel and worrying about what these guys are doing. We got things.
No, they are not doing anything new. Nothing new, you know, in relationship to domination and control, or at least attempting it. And, you know, if my theory is correct, they're in transition. Because, you know, the world, the southern hemisphere of the world, don't want to be dominated and controlled by them anymore. And they only, you know, so it's. But we haven't been able to control ourselves. And that's why I agree with you. It's, you know, the issue on the table for those in the diaspora, but for those in North America particularly, is at what point do we take responsibility for the food, clothing, and shelter and protection of our own historical identity?
And, you know, that
in the environment we in.
And Jay made mention of it, the black carcass having a function down there probably all of last week. You know, they might have had breakout sessions that are good on the surface, because some folks I know participated in some of the breakout sessions down there. But a lot of that, and I'm quite sure that the people that we know that participated is not under the illusion that the politicians are serious. They might be serious, but they're not serious. I think they do a lot of things for window dressing and for effect.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't be, you know, because if they were serious, they'd be really having some real serious talk about the direction of black America, not the direction of America. Because too many of these black politicians get in on it, talking about, I was elected by all people. Okay, white politicians was elected by all people. But they serve the interests of white America. They don't serve the interests of black America. It's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But when black politicians get in, they talk that old stupid crap about they representing everybody. They don't represent no white folks. They represent white folks' interests.
And, you know, on that point, Elliot, even if they didn't say it, if they laid out the agenda, we should be able to see who it serves. Okay, you can say America. But then when I look at your blueprint, I can see I'm in that. But when they don't even present a blueprint, they just say we represent all America. But when you look at white people, they don't say we represent white America, except for 45.
They don't have to.
And even that. But when you look at what they do,
it's clear who they represent. Exactly. You're exactly right. It's clear who they represent. They don't have to say it. And we find ourselves years later almost in the same predicament and situations that we were in 50, 60, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We got to stop this. It's madness.
Yeah, right. And that's why I liked what, one clicking brother, Abdul Malik, was, talking about in relationship to the local. Because we see it, that discussion obviously could be taking place in St. Louis, New York, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There's some street organizing, healing, negotiating that has to be done. Because at the quote unquote black elite level, they get scared and they got to do for themselves, them and their children. And they get pulled down. I mean, the stock market crash, they lost all that value. They got pulled down with everybody else. Black people ain't had none. They had nothing to lose. They ain't had nothing in the bank. They ain't had no house of value. They were renters. And they already didn't have health care. Their children wasn't going to college. So, but on the street level, and it's, if we don't work it, it'll be this constant, sporadic riots, disgruntled off of an incident. You'll have a reaction.
Yeah, we'll be reacting all the time. Exactly. Yep.
And organize at that level amongst those, that group, then we'll be able to say, there's no gentrification going on in here. As you know, because we control this, the older generation said they controlled the territory and didn't control it. Now we know we control the territory. This generation said we control the dollars and didn't control it. Now we control the commerce. And you're going to have to do business with us. Because if you don't do business with us, we got relationships in the Caribbean islands and the African continent and South America that we can do. We can do business. We don't have to do business with
somebody
you.
Else. Exactly. You're not the only game in town.
There you go. And we don't need you to be our spokesperson or our negotiator or our legal representative or our marketing agent. Because we uncreated those. So I don't, with 45 and the rest of them, that's to be expected. They got their own problems to worry about. Because they got their own, the Bernie Sanders crew, talking about revolution after 99% and on and on. They got them to worry about.
Richard, the struggle continues, man. I want to thank everybody for listening. And again, I want to thank Brother Malik with One Click. You can reach out to them. You can send them contributions. You can get involved. The P.O. Box number, One Click, Philadelphia, P.O. Box 50491, Philadelphia, PA 19132. The number to call is 215-730-3010. It was at 3010, Richard?
Yes.
Yeah, 215-730-3010 to get involved with One Click that are here in the local area. Brother Malik, we'll get an update, too, on how things are going with the men and women involved and hopefully draw up more and more members to get involved. And especially after the event on the 30th, hopefully they'll double their membership and have a lot of young people anxious to be involved with the breakout, the groups that they have, security and the entrepreneur group, the cultural stage, that with those type of groups they have, Brother Richard, that'll give the young people something to do, man, something to occupy their mind. When he talked about the boxing and a couple of people involved that want to train, people might have criticism in reference to boxing, but when I was young, they had a pal around in my neighborhood, and people boxed. They had Marian Anderson, a rec center, where people went up there and learned how to box. That gave somebody, even if you wasn't a good boxer, that gave you something to do, something to occupy your mind. If you don't have something to occupy your mind, it's foolishness that's going to occupy your mind. And they make sure that in these communities, there's no libraries. The libraries are closed. The libraries are open, don't have no books in there. And the black mayor that we had shut down the libraries. The libraries had restrictive hours where they wasn't half open. When the children get out of school, the libraries is closed. So, you know, man, I'm telling you, I'm glad that some of the community now, and especially some of the men that might have realized, according to Brother Malik, the error of their ways, are giving back now to help these situations. Brother Malik talked about people on the sidelines criticizing, and the thing is they weren't doing anything. It's no time for that anymore. We need all hands on deck. It's somebody that can do something out there. You can contribute in some kind of way to the reclamation of our people. Because if you don't and you sit on the sideline, then you contribute to the destruction of our people one way or the other. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. And again, for folks that didn't hear, on Friday, we got some new programming coming on, and it'll be debuting within another, at least by October the 1st, you'll hear several new programs of Typhoon Awakening, Brother Oshie with African Perspectives, Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank. We got Let's Buy Back 365.com with a program coming on. Us Lifting Us, Ulu has a program coming on. Troy Wilmore with SST will be coming on. There's a lot of programs that will be coming on Time for Awakening that will be debuting, and we'll be talking about them in the coming weeks because several of them will be debuting in the first week in October. Can't get this done without the listeners and support that we have from the listeners of Time for Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. Oh, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem, we'll be right back.
save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.